This time on Gamers Week Podcast.
I don't have confidence. If you're down 70% in your profit,
yeah,
sure, yeah, you've got a plan for 2027. I don't see it happening, and I hate the fact that we have a future where Square Enix doesn't exist.
They might continue to eke out an existence like Sega.
Yeah. Go.
Yeah.
And I took that personally.
I know.
But I'm not going to open the show with that.
Oh, come on.
No, if there's a new listener, we don't want to risk showing them who we really are too soon. It's like we're on first date behavior in the like the first 30 minutes of the episode.
I disagree. Girl burps are fine.
Oh, are they fine?
Girl burps are fine. Farts? Girl farts work too. I mean, if we want to do that, we're welcome to. Blue, all right. if you feel the need to squeeze out some cheese, just... take some mic and cheese.
Next week, I'll eat a bunch of Brussels sprouts beforehand because I'm trying to load the cannon. I didn't know that this was on the table. So,
this is not in the fucking cold open. I'm going to be so upset. I just want to throw that out there.
Oh my God, I can smell it through the mic.
Tastes like ketchup and onions.
God. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 117, and today is Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I will be your host this evening, but I am not alone. I would say my two gracious co-hosts, but after Monday night, things have changed.
Ooh, I'm no longer gracious.
They've done so much bullying that even Dwayne The Rock Johnson won't even be in the same room without a bodyguard. So give it up if you want to show these guys some love. Ryan Payne, a.k.a. Retro Game Brews, and Blue Williams, a.k.a. Writer's View. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I will say, though, sometimes I'm not a big fan of bullying, but sometimes it's warranted. That's all I'll say.
It builds character,
it's just,
right?
It's tough love, Donnie. We're just trying to make you stronger.
Whatever doesn't kill you make you stronger, right?
Right. And remind me, touching can't get mad. Not touching.
Remind me, how many deaths did we have during your run of Star Road?
It was like, was it 40?
48, I recall. Okay,
48, yeah.
Now, if you take away half of those, because,
right.
not paying attention, like paying attention to chat and you guys and stuff like that, that immediately cuts it in half. So I'd say 22 deaths were probably valid.
So like if you wrecked your car 48 times, but you know, you should take half of those off your record because I wasn't paying attention. So they don't count.
I was drunk the entire time.
Yeah, doesn't count.
You can hold that against me. Let's move on to our reviews, reactions, and requests. At Games with Coffee says, listening to episode 116 via audio, and I swear to God, I'm not sure if it's the new format or the live element, but holy shit, things are way funnier than before. Thank you, Coffee.
Does that mean we weren't funny before?
It took us 116 episodes to be funny. At Finer Points Geek says, the Xbox game studio closures impact the lives of so many people in a negative way, but it also damages their overall brand significantly. They are becoming synonymous with acquiring studios and having an adverse effect on them. Take it from an old fan of Rareware. I do share that sentiment. And at GoHoboGo says, I've got bad news for you, Gamers Week. From Police1.com on January 2nd, 2014, police investigate death of popular California priest. The body of Reverend Eric Freed was found in the St. Bernard Church Rectory after he failed to show up for morning mass. Eureka Police Chief Andrew Mills says the department is conducting a murder investigation at the church. What?
I so want to know if this is the same Eric Freed whose letter you read
right
in the retro rewind.
Oh!
There it is. There's the recognition.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Oh, I know.
Now you feel bad, don't you? You feel bad.
No, but now we have to.
He doesn't feel bad.
We have to contact the church. We have to
ask them about a 10-year-old murder.
Yeah, maybe do a seance or something like that so we can contact the spirit of Eric Fried and ask him if he sent a letter into GamePro or Electronic Gaming Monthly back in the 90s.
Can you do a Ouija board via Zencaster? Is that possible? Yeah.
You know? I'm sure people have streamed Ouija boards on Twitch before.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Oh, I'm stiff.
We know.
And now let's take a look at our patron shoutouts.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Sir Coffee of House Blend, first of his name. Hybrid Divide, Matto 1606. You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox, PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke. Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan. John Baron, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retroman, Gamatroid, Moradib, Michael LeKite, Emoesque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Pickled Pepper, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Wizard of Zardoz, Bops and Dugdut, Loudmoth, Retro Blast Pat, Great Cyaman 81, BNT Zilla Guy, The Mad Milkman, Seven Castle Forest, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnear, Dunky Forever, Ducks in Disguise, and Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our bi-weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
And now let's take a look at our headlines for the week.
So our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. And right now, they want to know, what do you think is the best and worst maps in retro gaming? Send your answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
Worst maps. Oh, that's interesting.
So I think we should start with best and then we can go to worst. So I will start things off. I think probably the best from my experience is Zelda Link to the Past with the kind of the day world and night world, the movement back and forth between that. There's a lot of opportunities, especially with the dungeons, kind of a lot of cool stuff you can do. I got to say, hands down, probably one of my favorite maps.
I'm going to say Super Mario 3. Though I don't know if it does it count as a map. I'm going to say
technically, I think it counts.
But like, you know, the dancing cactuses and all the different things that are happening on in the map and being able to look ahead, plan your route. I like that one a lot.
One of the very first maps that I remember, if you can even call it a map, I think it qualifies, is Castlevania. Like all the different sections and everything like that until you reach Dracula's castle. One of my favorites.
So then it goes to worst. For me, and I know I'll probably catch a lot of flack for this, but Metroid is so confusing.
That was actually going to be my answer too. The Metroid map is the worst. I love that game, but the Metroid map is the worst.
Oh, man. And, you know, Super Metroid, it's better. I think, you know, it's a little bit more, a little less difficult to follow, but original Metroid is just so convoluted. It's ridiculous.
So let's start off with this week's quick takes. In a May 8th town hall meeting, Xbox Game Studio head Matt Booty told employees that Microsoft needs smaller scale games that can earn the company prestige and awards. This came just one day after the shutdown of Tango Gameworks, makers of Hi-Fi Rush. Posting on his personal Twitter account, former Tango Gameworks project manager Kazuuki Higashira tweeted out images of the awards Hi-Fi Rush had won over the past year with a caption, "Not enough?" Higashira's message is a direct response to the Xbox executive requesting more award-winning games.
Talk about putting your foot in your mouth.
Right?
It's seriously, it's like with this whole thing, they have no idea how bad it looks. They're not, it's like they're not even trying to make it better. They had that, you know, podcast where they came out and said, oh, we need to make Xbox, you know, these are business decisions. We need to make Xbox stable, you know, for years and years to come. But then the dirt on the grave of Tango Gameworks is not even settled yet. It's not cold yet. And they're already going, well, we need more games with more awards. Think before you speak. That's why they pay you so much money.
Is that?
I got to give credit to Tango Gameworks for coming out with a picture with Not Enough. That's a beautiful clapback. Yeah, chef's kiss clapback for that.
That's the kind of stuff that makes me think, oh, maybe I should go back on Twitter.
But just to be so incredibly disconnected from what the sentiment, I mean, Xbox has been dragged over the coals for the last week or so when it came to some of the announcements of all those game studios in which they're going to be kind of getting rid of. And for them to come back and essentially make this an excuse, right? We're looking for more studios to come up with games that have awards and company prestige. I mean, I get that with Redfall, don't get me wrong, but when you let go of a team that provided you with those, wouldn't it make more sense to come up with a palpable or palatable example of what you were looking to do as a result of getting rid? I mean, if they told us, hey, it's a financial thing, or we're having some issues with this, or we want to be more consolidated, something like that.
Be honest.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, rather than... Essentially, it felt like it was throwing shade a little bit to some of these developers. I would much rather them just give it to me in dollars and cents, be the business rather than saying, giving me an excuse and potentially fanning the flames that they're running into.
Yeah, right. I think they have a script of things that they have come up with over the last several years to try to assure Xbox fans that, no, it's going to get better. We're going to have your games. We're going to do all this. So we need award-winning games without even like stopping to think about what they're really saying. They're like, this is what people want to hear, so we're going to say it.
But to make this type of a blunder where there's like, oh, we need more award-winning studios or more award-winning games. Mm-hmm. And the studio that you just closed gave you an award-winning game. That tells you just how much of a disconnect there is between the upper level management and down there in the dirt or in the trenches or where the people actually reside. And I know this firsthand from working for companies that use all these buzzwords and stuff like that. Like, oh, we're trying to give more to our customers and make it better for our customers. When in fact, no, you're just trying to pad your pockets and keep your own job as a senior leadership and letting go of all the lower level people. That's what you really meant to say, but you can't really say that. So.
Right. And I think if there's a positive here, it's that nobody's buying it. Everyone online is calling Xbox out for this really stupid thing. So hopefully at some point they actually learn a lesson. Doubtful, but I mean, at least people aren't buying their bullshit.
Didn't I call it the death rattle of Microsoft or Xbox last week or 2 weeks ago? So this is kind of like a little bit more. Yeah, let's do it. Let's see it.
Trying to shake them off that mortal coil, you know? Yeah.
So Sony will be replacing former PlayStation boss Jim Ryan with two CEOs, Hideaki Nishino and Herman Hulst. Paging Mr. Herman. Mr. Herman, you have a telephone call at the front desk. Herman Hulst, that's a name. Effective June 1st, 2024, Hideaki Nishino will be CEO of SIE's Platform Business Group, and Herman Hulst will be CEO of SIE's Studio Business Group.
These are the big brains that probably are the ones who are deciding that the online Steam games still need PSN accounts. And apparently it gets you a promotion.
I have a question. Is it a wise decision to have two CEOs for your business? I mean, I get that there may be different sections of the business, right? One is the platform business, one is the studio business, but
whatever the hell that means.
Right. I have no idea what the difference is between those, but from my experience working in a corporate setting, having two people who are making the decisions and potentially the same level as each other, that might be an opportunity, we'll say, for some difficult
Butting
relationships.
Heads.
Yeah, because it's the kind of the snake with two heads, right? Now, granted, I am not working on the inner workings of Sony Interactive Entertainment, so I don't know how that operates or what that looks like. But, you know, with Jim Ryan, he was such a big name and everyone knew him and he was out in the press. Not everyone liked him necessarily, but he was the face of that company. How are you going to be able to do that with two people at the same time, right? You know, Jim Ryan was such an important piece to Sony Interactive Entertainment for their brand, realistically. And now, again, you've got two people, two figures that you're going to have to. I mean, we're not, you know, Matt Booty is now in charge versus, you know, Xbox boss Phil Spencer. So Drink. That's changed, right? Drink. So, just mild criticism for that. But I think it definitely has an impact on how you present the business moving forward.
Well, with any luck, we'll get some nice dramatic news. Exciting at some.
Well, and Main Ace Chase says, CEO's only job is to raise the value of the shares and bounce. How many CEOs stay around for more than like 3 or 4 years?
No, that's a good point.
Well, considering that they'll get huge severance packages or, you know, huge bonuses when they leave, Sony must really think it's worthwhile to have two CEOs. Two of them. So they have to pay, twice as much.
Two golden parachutes.
Yeah.
When one doesn't deploy, I've got a second. A new study has found that YouTube is the most popular and trusted platform for discovering new games among players. PR and marketing agency Big Games Machine surveyed 1,000 US-based console and PC gamers about how they find new titles to purchase and play, of which 64% said they discover games via YouTube. According to the report, TikTok was the second most used platform at 36%, followed by Instagram, 35%, Facebook, 34%, and word of mouth, 32%. The least popular sources were Metacritic's professional reviews at 3%, the site's user reviews at 4%, and print magazines at 5%. And my Nana at the nursing home, she holds a solid lead at 7%. So she's more trusted than Metacritic.
Hey, I just wanted to point out, you said it wrong. You just called it Facebook.
I didn't call it. It was in the article.
I mean, the Facebook. Isn't that what the dads are supposed to say? The Facebook.
I officially feel old, by the way, because I don't use any of these. As far as getting my gaming information is concerned, I use Blue Williams mostly, but.
You're welcome. It's a thankless service, but somebody has to do it.
So I guess maybe this is the whole thing about like review bombs, right? Metacritic, I have no value anymore, right? Because nobody cares, I guess.
And what's so interesting about that is the Metacritic user reviews are at 4%. And still, even though review bombs are a thing, Metacritic's professional reviews are the lowest of all of these at 3%. So I guess what this means is we need to spend more time on YouTube.
So we can be the source. We can be the trusted source of your video game reviews and news.
Yep.
Press pass. Press pass. Press pass. Backstage passes. Now, this next thing, I think we can just skip over this.
Yeah, we could probably skip over it.
No. Okay. Read the notes, please.
The Strong National Museum of Play has announced the 5 games joining the World Video Game Hall of Fame this year. Asteroids, Myst, Resident Evil, Ultima, and SimCity. These 5 games beat out other classics like Neopets, Metroid, and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater to grab a place in the World Video Game Hall of Fame's 10th class.
I think when it comes to this kind of stuff, Blue shouldn't do the notes for that week.
What?
If we've got something coming up like this where she's just here to gloat, I think
don't
we...
Don't be butthurt because you couldn't pick the game. For anybody who is new here, we do predictions every time something like this comes up. We each predicted a game to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and my game, my pick, Resident Evil, was the only one who made it. So yes, I am going to gloat, and as Frank says in the chat, podcast daddy, suck it.
So you picked Resident Evil, I picked Guitar Hero, and Ryan picked
Tony Hawk's
Pro Skater. Okay. Yep.
Oh, come on.
All right. So for our first main headline today from gamesindustry.biz, Square Enix embarking on aggressive multi-platform strategy as profits drop 70%. That's 70%. Square Enix has released its financials for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2024, with the results largely below what it had previously forecasted. As a result, the firm is set to implement a brand new strategy going forward, hoping to achieve stable profit generation in its digital entertainment segment by 2027. Its new strategy to tackle these challenges is called Square Enix Reboots and Awakens, and is a three-year plan targeting long-term growth. The company wants to enhance its productivity and release titles more regularly by optimizing its development footprint, it said. If that's not corporate speak. The company said it will also aggressively pursue a multi-platform strategy that includes Nintendo platforms, PlayStation, Xbox, and PCs. The company is set to rebuild its overseas business divisions from the ground up, it added. That will involve optimizing costs across its European and American offices via structural reforms, aka more layoffs.
Just come out and say that you, no, you've it done sounds poorly. Bad.
People will be mad.
No, stop, stop. No, no. I think they'll appreciate it more and they'll respect you more if you come out and say, look, we've made some poor decisions. We've had some bad development. That's just not what the people want. Let's get back to giving people what they want. Stop all the corporate speak. And I think people will be like, yeah, you know what? Let's do it. Square Enix, come on. Give me something that I'm actually going to be enjoyable or that I'm going to be hyped up to play and that I'm going to enjoy when I play it. They've churned out crap. Like Final Fantasy has not, in my opinion, my personal opinion, Final Fantasy has not been a household staple since the early 2000s. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong. If you're not into their MMOs, which right. I am not. I think Final Fantasy 14 is huge and they've got a ton of mileage out of it. But as far as like their standalone entries, I think you're correct. It's probably 10 is the last like really big one. 12 was great. I enjoyed it, but I don't think it did the kind of numbers that, you know, they were previously known for like in their late 90s heyday. Right. But I do have a theory that I think suits at companies. Eventually, they hold their position so long that they kind of become one with the suit and they forget how to speak regular English. They only okay. know corporate-ese.
I'm going to try to translate corporate-ese for this one by optimizing right. its development footprint. Part of that says to me AI, right? Oh,
of course. It totally
optimizing,
does.
Right? It looks like, you know, based off of all the things that they said that they're looking to expand to Europe and America, but it says optimizing costs across Europe and America via structural reforms. Again, that to me stinks of we're going to switch over to AI development.
Right, which Square Enix has made no secret of them wanting desperately to go right. that way. So it'll be right. interesting to see if they can actually make it work or if they're cutting their entire creative workforce and then in a year or so go, oops.
But doesn't it feel like a little too late on this one after you've dropped 70% in your profits? Isn't that a downward spiral? Didn't BlackBerry back in the day say, well, we're not in a downward spiral or a death spiral, if you will? This feels like that press conference, right? Like, oh, we're not dead. We swear, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that they are going to try to save themselves with what has been working best for them, which is the title of their three-year strategy, Square Enix Reboots. That's all people want. They want reboots of the old games that they love. That's why Final yeah. Fantasy VII Remake has been doing so well, though I heard Part 2 is not doing as well as Part 1, but I cannot confirm that. But yeah, I guess lean into what's working for you in order to save the company, I guess. I don't know. What else would you do? Clearly, Final Fantasy 16 said to me, because that was their big effort to go back to what made them a household name to begin with. It was an effort to go back to their roots and it fell flat. Absolutely. So if you can't go back to your roots anymore and just remake what you've already done that people liked, same thing Disney does.
That's true, right? And we all eat it up.
Yeah, people freaking love it. So why not?
You had great games, Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana, Final Fantasy 3, Final Fantasy 2. I don't remember who did Illusion of Gaia.
But oh, that was Quintet.
Quintet, okay. Yep. But you have all of these great RPG games that set the basis, that set the foundation. And you know that you have that ability to do that. You just the creative mindset is there to create. You don't necessarily have to stay within that fantasy realm. You can kind of branch out a little bit, go maybe cyberpunk or go just other themes is what I'm sure. trying to say.
Yeah, it's stepping outside their comfort zone.
Of course. Yeah. Look at what they did with their last release. It was a generic run-of-the-mill that everybody was like, this is a Final Fantasy game. From the trailer that I saw, it didn't look anything spectacular. Nothing like that. Nothing was unique. Nothing that set it out from everything else. It was just like here's another RPG game from Squaresoft. Go ahead and buy it. You're like, why?
I mean, I bought it.
We know.
You're their target market. We know this.
I know. The suckers are like, oh, look, they have the Aeons.
And to your point, Donnie, too, at one point, I mean, they were Square and then they became Square Enix. This was supposed mm-hmm. to be the juggernaut for a lifetime, right? They were supposed right. to be able to pump out games, you know, Dragon Quest, Final Fantasy for the next 100 years. And it's turned into more of a company that has tried to follow trends and has done it poorly. And that's the worst part, I think, for me, is looking back on it, realizing that, you know, they were just such a creative force in the industry and not being able to live up to that. I mean, I guess it's the old adage, if, you know, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. I just didn't want that for Square Enix because I just have so much nostalgia for them. But at this point, I don't have confidence. If you're down 70% in your profit,
yeah,
sure, yeah, you've got a plan for 2027. I don't see it happening, and I hate the fact that we have a future where Square Enix doesn't exist.
They might continue to eke out an existence like Sega.
Yeah. Go, ooh.
Yeah.
And I took that personally.
I know.
I don't think we'll get to a point where Square Enix will fail to exist. They will probably scale back, like they said, their production and only focus on like that one big hit. And you know what? Maybe it'll take a couple of years for them to put something out. And when they play test it, when they do the focus groups and all that stuff, they need to make sure that it's a 10 across the board. Otherwise, they just don't release it. And maybe if they wait and wait and wait and are fine. I'm not saying wait something like Cyberpunk 2077, where you're in development for 20 years or whatever like that, because that would just be stupid. But just make sure that what you're giving people is a quality product. Don't try to do anything that's just like, oh, it's all this AI stuff or all this all the hot new stuff. Just tell me a good story. And that's what I think Square Enix has done previously with their RPG titles, is you told me a great story.
I just feel old though, knowing that all the like juggernauts of the gaming industry are all now shells of their former selves.
We still have Nintendo.
That's true. And they're in the console games, so I guess they get a pass maybe because they have a vested interest in their console doing particularly well.
But like Capcom.
Konami.
Capcom just posted like its seventh straight year of record profits. They still are killing it with Resident Evil and Monster Hunter. It's just not what you want from Capcom.
That's true. That is also right. true.
Yeah. We want the good old days back, damn it.
All right, next up from GameSpot, EA considering in-game advertising, but will take a thoughtful approach. EA CEO Andrew Wilson has said in-game advertising could be a meaningful driver of growth for the company's bottom line. Speaking during the company's latest earnings briefing, Wilson said it's still early on that front, and if this is something EA does decide to push further into, the company will be thoughtful. Again, in quotations, about it. Wilson was specifically discussing in-game ads in the context of more traditional AAA games and not necessarily mobile, where ads of all types are more commonplace. EA's business is already booming, as the company just reported a full year profit of $1.273 billion on $7.5 billion in revenue. EA laid off more than 600 people and canceled games earlier this year, including a Star Wars first-person shooter.
But they need more money.
Well, their business is booming, you know, and those two things are completely not related, the layoffs and the canceled games, and then business is booming. Like business is hard.
So what kind of advertising are they talking about? Are they talking about the cup of noodles that's in Death Stranding? Are they talking about...
You mean Final Fantasy 15?
Yeah, 15.
Yeah.
It was monsters in Death Stranding.
Oh, I thought it was cup of noodles. So if product placement... If I'm playing a game, if I'm playing a sports game, soccer stadiums, baseball stadiums, whatever. Yeah, okay. I see that stuff in real life. I see advertisements and all that crap. That's not going to bother me. That's part of the experience, if I can say that. But if you start putting in political ads, I don't want to see that in a video game.
Well, and that... this full article does talk about how Barack Obama's campaign paid EA to put political ads in Burnout Paradise. So it's already been done.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, like, that's not why I would imagine most people go into gaming. That it's an escape from reality, right? Trying to get away from things. Having political ads and then creating political discourse as a result, probably not the best route. That's not something I'd be looking for out of a game. That would fall out the side of thoughtful to me. But, you know, to your point as well, I mean, ads have been a part of games. I remember you'd play the original Turtles game and the Pizza Hut was just in the background, right? It was a product placement. Sure. I'm fine with that. But if it's starting to go the mobile route as well, where you have to watch an ad in order to get to a certain place, or there's something that's disrupting the gameplay, that's where I'm going to have a huge problem.
I'm out.
Right, yeah. Right. No, it's like playing a live service game. If you try to access, like, you can't go in this room because you haven't bought this DLC yet. It'll now be like open world games. Oh, but you can't access this town yet until you watch... You know, you haven't earned enough ad points. Please sit and watch 3 minutes of ads, and then you can go on to the town.
Again, that would fall out the side of realm, or rather of thoughtful in my mind, right?
Thoughtful means nothing.
It is. Absolutely nothing. Yeah, it's such an ambiguous term. And I doing that on purpose, right? It's like, oh, well, we're trying to be more thoughtful.
We really, really thought about all the different places that we could put this ad. Like, if you go to the shopkeeper in the game, okay, well, this costs 2,000 gil, but if you watch an ad, you can get it for 500.
Yeah.
Again, though, I think we've said this before, and I'll reiterate it. The reason I get ads when watching YouTube is because it's a free service. So they have to generate money in some way.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Right? When I'm paying for a product, my expectation is that I don't have ads in that. I'm already giving you money. So as far as I'm concerned, I paid my debt to you in order to receive this content. And to be inundated with ads, really, again, if it takes away from the gameplay, if it's all those things, then as a consumer, why not just charge me extra if you're struggling that much? I'll make the decision whether I want to afford that game moving forward and not be a free ad generation thing for you, right? Where you get to keep pinging me for more and more ad money because somebody else is paying for it. Mm-hmm. Let me make that decision up front whether or not I want to give your business more money in order to get to the games. Now, granted, I'm not a fan of the fact that games would be $80, $90, whatever it is, right? But if you're truly struggling, then you've got to either make cuts somewhere else or pass that on to consumer and then let them make a decision as to whether or not they want to do business with you.
And the fact is that they're not hurting. They're not hurting for money.
That was going to be my next point.
Right.
This doesn't make sense. You're not hurting for money. So quit it with the ads. Quit it with the talks of ads and video games. And I swear, if it ever became a thing where... like some of the people in chat are saying, like, oh, every time the ball is reset, let's play an ad. Or, it's the seventh inning stretch, let's play an ad. Or we're going in between innings. No, if that ever became the case, if that's the standard, the norm, then my days of playing modern video games are done.
And honestly, that's why I don't play mobile games. I would love to play mobile games. I would love to do something on the go, but they're just so inundated with ads. I mean, even to the point in which I'm getting ads for games that claim they have no ads. I was like, whoa.
What was that noise?
So you're literally annoying me right now to say, by the way, my game won't annoy you. It's just something
right. Right. Depending on how well EA is able to do this and what the consumer response is to the ads in their games, we'll probably depend on whether other publishers go, hey, we're leaving all this money on the table by not having ads in our games. Like, and this could be a crossroads for this kind of thing.
Absolutely. I think that this is the catalyst to eventually a future where we just accept the fact that ads are in games. And I hate that. That sucks. Especially, again, if it affects gameplay in any way whatsoever, but also just the simple fact that, again, I've already paid for this service. Why? Why do I have to continue to generate money for you? I mean, they tried it with the loot boxes, and then they got in trouble for gambling.
Right? Surprise mechanics. They are not
right.
loot boxes.
Sorry. Surprise mechanics, right? So clearly there's a disconnect on profitability of games. So it can go one of two ways. It can either do ads, AI, something's gonna happen. Something's gonna break as far as that's concerned.
What? Poor EA only has $1.273 billion in profit. Okay. You read the article. How are they supposed to get by on $1.273 billion in profit?
You know what? It's bootstrap financing.
Yeah. These are hard times. Really, really hard times.
Nobody knows.
She's a bass. All right, next up from PC Gaming, the season of game company guffaws continues with NetEase apologizing for a Marvel Rivals preview contract that asked streamers not to make subjective negative reviews of the game. Publisher NetEase has walked back a controversial non-disparagement requirement for streamers and video makers previewing its upcoming hero shooter, Marvel Rivals. Marvel Rivals is an upcoming 6v6 hero shooter reminiscent of Overwatch, but with all those superhero guys from the comics. Rivals is beginning its first closed alpha playtest, with a number of content creators previewing the game as part of the test. The offending clause of the contract, alpha participants were required to sign, specifically prohibited any public statements or discussions that are detrimental to the reputation of the game, including subjective negative reviews of the game. After NetEase was criticized on Twitter, the company promised a new, less restrictive contract for streamers. We are aware that there are inappropriate and misleading terms in the commitment regarding sharing non-disparagement content, a NetEase representative told the Discord server for playtest participants. We sincerely apologize for the miscommunication and your unpleasant experiences. Gamers, we heard you and we listened. Anytime I see this, that somebody has to walk back something, it's like, I want to grab them and what were you thinking?
Who's the bully now?
that's not being a bully. That's putting somebody in their place when they do something stupid like this.
Well, there's a lot of FAFO going on, and they're finding out.
Oh yeah,
of course,
100%.
And that's the thing I don't get is, okay, I can understand you have a personal opinion, like the game is not for you. Okay, I can understand that, but you still need to allow people to say that. If you give a streamer the ability to play your game before it, and they're like, yeah, it's just not for me. Okay, say that. Say it, like, maybe find some positives about the game. Like, oh, I like the soundtrack, or I like the way the gameplay was made, but I just like the content and stuff like that. You're more than likely going to have enough people who, if it's a great game, they're going to like it and they're going to be vocal about it. So those 1, 2Z, 3Z people, like, that's not for me, they're going to fall by the wayside. And if it's, you know, if it's a collective that loves the game, then of course it's going to build up the reviews for it. But if it's a global flop, if everybody reviewing it has something negative to say about it, that like, oh, it's too clunky, or they're trying to do this, they're trying to extract more money from me out of this, then sorry, you should be called out for that crap.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, I love that the gaming community came together after reading the kind of terms and service and called them out on this. I love the fact that they did that. You know what? I guarantee you there were people who read this and went, oh man, I've got to do this because, you know, for some reason or other, that's going to be part of their livelihood, right? They're a YouTube reviewer, or they're somebody who's a social media influencer, and they rely on those content dollars in order to be successful. So they want to be able to review the most positive game. But the folks who had the gumption to sit there and go, this is crap. This is absolutely awful. And pointing out the fact that this really goes against this whole idea of, you know, user reviews, release reviews from, you know, particular content providers. This goes against the nature of this, right? They should be given the opportunity to provide a fair and objective opinion as to how they experience the game. You know what? If you made a quality game, you shouldn't have to worry about this. You shouldn't have to put this into your agreement that you can't disparage them in any way. And right. Again, the community came together and said, you know, you, we're not going to do that. And by the way, we're going to call you out publicly for it. Kudos. Yeah.
I think this was them trying to have their cake and eat it too, because so they're having people play test the alpha version. People are going to be unnecessarily mean about how the alpha version looks. Like, you remember when the alpha footage was leaked from GTA 6 and people were like, oh my God, it's the end of Grand Theft Auto. It looks horrible. Well, of course it does. It's alpha footage. But if you don't want people to publicly bash your game over alpha footage, then include an NDA, and then that solves your problem. Right. But they still wanted the positive opinions to get out right. there. So that's why they said, oh no, you can't give the negative opinions. You can only give the positive opinions. Well, you can't have it both ways. You have to pick one or the other. But it is also kind of like you were saying, why are you having people play test the game if you don't want their opinions? If you don't want their opinions, then don't have a playtest.
Well, they're hoping that they can, you know, pay them off.
Yeah, essentially. Right? Mm-hmm. This is some gangster shit, right?
Yeah, pretty much is. Yeah, it's that whole like, well, if you give us a negative review, then we're not going to come to you next time. It doesn't matter if you have several million followers. We'll go find somebody. We'll go find Jake Paul, who's got, and not the Jake Paul, but Jake Paul, who's got like 4,000 followers, and we'll let him review the game. And we'll say, hey, we'll slip a couple of money, you know, greenbacks underneath the table for you, and maybe a brand new copy of an EA title. If you just say, hey, it's good, so we can get people to go out and buy this.
Yeah, but I mean, if the game is shit, people are going to say it's shit, rightly so.
Right.
And if you weren't worried about that, probably you wouldn't include this clause, which probably tells you what you need to know about this game, at least at this point.
I can't wait till it comes out. Honestly.
True, because it's got all this kind of negative attention from this, that it will be interesting to see what the final product looks like. And if more people will be waiting to see if this game is going to fail now because of this.
So maybe this was intentional. They wanted some publicity for this game because nobody was talking about it. Nobody cared. And now they've got it. You know, any press is good press, as they say.
Is it, though?
Not in the gamers community.
No, not so much. Like, Gamer Looks at 40 says, give us a negative review and we break your kneecaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the NDA clause.
All right, now let's take a look at our top three new releases for the week.
All right, so last week was pretty good. And this week, not so much. First up is Read Only Memories Neurodiver, out on PS5, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Read Only Memories Neurodiver is a story-rich adventure and the sequel to 2064 Read Only Memories. Explore the rich world with an intuitive point-and-click interface as you take on the role of a young psychic agent tasked with tracking down a mysterious antagonist hiding in people's memories. So the trailer makes this look like it's a 16-bit point-and-click, kind of an anime vibe, very colorful. Yeah. Next up is Homeworld 3, out on PC. Tactical, beautiful, and wholly unique, the GOTY-winning sci-fi RTS returns with Homeworld 3. Assume control and battle through fleet combat in dazzling, fully 3D space while the award-winning story unfolds on a galactic scale. I watched about 20 seconds of the trailer and I went, oh no, this looks too much for me. Yeah, this is definitely nerdy RTS stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then last up is Dread Delusion out on PC. Dread Delusion is an open world RPG brimming with strange places and dark perils. Carve your own path through the flying continents of a shattered land. Discover curious towns, unearth occult secrets, master powerful magic, and change the world through your choices. So this is kind of an old school looking PC RPG. So what are you in for this week, Ryan?
So taking a look at Dread Delusion, I got to be honest, this is like my least favorite era in gaming is from an aesthetic standpoint.
Yeah, it's not a pretty game. It's not a pretty game at all.
Very ugly. I'm sure the game is fun, but like that's the first thing I see with it. So immediately I'm like, I don't know about this. I mean, yeah, it's Skyrim-esque. It looks kind of cool, and maybe it'll be interesting. But that first impression stick is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. Read only memories. Neurodiver. There we go. That's the word. That looks like a game that would be really good for our Gamers Week live Twitch streams that we do every other Monday, you know, where I just talk the entire time because it's nothing but dialogue and text. I think you guys would love that.
People are just listening or missing the expression on our faces as you're saying this horrible, horrible, horrible idea.
Making a joke, yes?
So yeah, it's obviously mostly reading for it. So yeah, I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass on this one. Which brings me to Homeworld 3, RTS. You said the magic word for me. It looks gorgeous as far as things go. Very, very nice art style. Looks beautiful, breathtaking kind of cutscenes that are for it. And, you know, I love RTS. So if I got to pick one out of these three, Homeworld 3 is what I'm going to go with.
Okay. What about you, Donnie?
I share the same sentiment with Ryan about Dread Delusion. If I wanted to play an RPG on the N64, I'd go play an RPG game on the N64. I immediately saw this, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing within the first 5 seconds. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And after the next 5 seconds, I was like, "No, they're not kidding." Okay, yep, nope, checked out. Shut the trailer down. I was like, "I don't want anything else to do with that." Homeworld 3. I am not an RTS guy, but this looks visually amazing. If I were an RTS guy, my jeans would probably be already wet, but I'm not. So
they are over here
because of the way this looks.
We saw your legs earlier. You're not even wearing jeans.
Yeah. His seat is moist. Because of the way it looks, let everybody see the package. I think maybe I could get into this just like a trial run to see, okay, am I smart enough to play an RTS? So based on the looks alone, I would try it out. But my pick for this week is going to be Read Only Memories Neurodiver. I looked at the trailer, really? And it takes me back. It takes me back to the point and click games, the King's Quest and Shadowgate and all that stuff. It looks great. It's got that vibrant color palette. I'm not sure exactly what the story entails, but just based on the looks alone, I think I would be willing to try this one.
Nice.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, I am. I would have not, you know, if we made bets, I wouldn't be picking that one for you, but
no, me neither.
I like it.
Well, Blue, what about you? What are your picks?
I don't want any of these.
And that's fine. That's totally fine.
I don't really like point and click games. I like some RTS, but this just looks way too RTS-y.
That's a great adjective. Yeah, right.
And Dread Delusion, kind of like you said, I don't have nostalgia for that era of PC games. So I'm just going to nope out of this week.
F this SM out.
Indeed.
Well, even games like Ultima, like the old Ultima PC games, I think they looked much better than what Dread Delusion is trying to do.
It reminds me of like when they turned Oregon Trail into 3D, you know?
And I don't remember them doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that was better looking as far as like the characters are concerned. So maybe this is pre that, but it reminds you of like Tribes as well, where everything was just boxy and like faces where, you know, there was like a crease in the middle of their face.
It's kind of a GoldenEye vibe.
Yeah.
Lara Croft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little Lara Croft.
Yeah, little triangle chesticles. Yeah.
Chesticles.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. The segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the people who lived it. On this week's episode, Bill continues his deep dive in Final Fantasy IV by talking about the big and small moments that captured our imagination. So this week's question is, what was your first RPG, and do you still think it's worth playing today? Let Bill know your answer by sending him a tweet at @AGamerLooksAt40 on Twitter. I think my first RPG, if you don't technically count The Legend of Zelda as an RPG.
Which I don't.
Okay.
That's funny. That's my answer.
See, I think The Legend, you start at a certain point and you progress, you get more health, you get more weapons and everything like that. You walk around a map, you discover new places. That's what an RPG is.
Zelda 2 definitely was an RPG.
No, because that was a platformer. You actually jumped up and all the
but
stuff.
At least
you
had a leveling system.
Shut your face, dude. Shut your face. Mine would have had to have been, I think I played Dragon Warrior on the NES before I played Final Fantasy.
I'm going to also go with that for my choice on this one. Well, not choice, but my experience was getting a free copy of Dragon Warrior as a result of getting a subscription to Nintendo Power. Mm-hmm. And playing it and going, what is this? It was a completely foreign concept. And I didn't really get back into RPGs until Final Fantasy VII. So I didn't get it. I didn't understand the gameplay. I didn't get very far in it. And I quit. But I've gone back and played that game several times. And I will say, I enjoy it. It's a game that you can finish in like 6 hours if you know what you're doing. So is it worth playing today? Absolutely. I think it's a fun little introduction to what kind of Enix was doing with RPGs. And it's still fun to level up and play the game. And it's, again, as long as you kind of have an understanding of what RPGs are, I think you'd enjoy it.
If you have an understanding of what RPGs are, then The Legend of Zelda is an RPG.
Not an RPG. Cool. Got it. Yep. Moving on.
Yeah, I was going to say Zelda just to make Ryan upset. But also, you know, I am still one of those camps that say, I don't really care about EXP. It's RPG enough for me. You're playing a role as Zelda. Good enough for me. But if we're being sticklers, I'll go Final Fantasy I.
Did you just say you're playing a role as Zelda?
Take away your gamer card.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got her.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba! God damn it.
Who is Zorlda?
Well, thanks, everyone. This has been the last episode of Gamer Greek Podcast.
I'm just glad Donnie caught it before somebody else did. And then we got flamed on Twitter for it. So Donnie, I appreciate you keeping us on our toes.
No, cheers. I would have listened back to this tomorrow when I was editing it and said, oh, nope, that's getting cut. Like it never happened.
And now it's permanent. Even better. All right. Well, thank you for coming, students. Please take your seat. Welcome back to Professor Rybrid's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we'll be talking about a blight that has had real-world implications stemming from the cover of a very popular series of video games. We, of course, will be talking about the very supernatural and likely coincidental occurrence known as the Madden Curse. Dun, dun, dun. Needed the extra music for effect.
We can add that stuff in now, right?
Yeah, that's right. I can do that here. But
stop giving me stuff to do.
All right. So before we jump to the story, I'd like to point out that I don't believe in curses or dark supernatural or metaphysical forces. So today's lesson is intended for entertainment purposes only. Now, if you believe that sort of thing, that's your prerogative. But I wanted to point out that I am not suggesting in any way that this curse is based in reality. Now, that we've got that disclaimer out of the way, let's dive into this eerie tale. So, John Madden, for those who don't know, was a famous American football coach and a broadcaster in the mid to late 20th century. Now, he's known for his victorious seasons with the Raiders football team and his eccentric style of broadcasting, often saying the most obvious things with loads of enthusiasm.
In the red farm, you know. Yeah,
oh, if he throws the ball, the guy catches it, there's 6 points. Now, starting in 1988 for the MS-DOS, Apple II, and Commodore 64, John Madden Football, later shortened to just Madden in the Year, is a wildly successful video game franchise that has had a yearly release since its inception. Now, it's widely considered to be the pinnacle in the franchise for American football game and has outlasted several competitors to be the only real lasting football franchise in the gaming space. Now, however, though, starting in 1999, a sinister coincidence has been occurring. And it would appear that any player featured on the cover of a Madden game has experienced a wide range of maladies the season following their appearance. Now, 1999 was not the first year to have players on the cover of the game. That started in 1994 with Ricky Waters of the San Francisco 49ers. So I'm not really sure if players prior to 99 were either immune to curses or they sold their soul to the Underlord, but it wasn't until Garrison Hurst did the curse start to take hold. So let's look through the extensive list of players and incidents that have occurred post Madden cover experiences. So like we said, starting off in 1999, Garrison Hurst was a running back for the 49ers. He had a great season, but suffered an ankle injury in the playoffs and had to miss the next two seasons. In 2000, Barry Sanders, running back for the Lions, unexpectedly announced his retirement before the season even started. Whoops. 2001, Eddie George, running back for the Titans, bobbled a pass in the playoffs that led to a game-deciding interception, and he never returned to form after that. Now, in 2002, Dante Culpepper, which is our first QB from the list from the Vikings, suffered a knee injury, and the Vikings finished the season well out of the playoffs. In 2003, Marshall Faulk, running back for the St. Louis Rams, sorry, Donnie, suffered several injuries that season and never truly recovered.
Too soon.
Too soon. It's been decades.
How do I say goodbye?
Now, 2004, Michael Vick, QB for the Falcons, suffered a broken leg in a preseason game and then ran into legal troubles that I'd prefer not to discuss on this podcast, so we're moving on. In 2005, Ray Lewis, linebacker for the Ravens, missed a lot of games due to injuries, and the Ravens failed to make the playoffs that year. In 2006, Donovan McNabb, QB for the Eagles, suffered a hernia, and the Eagles missed the playoffs that year after winning the Super Bowl the previous season. In 2007, Sean Alexander, running back for the Seahawks, broke his foot that season and never returned to his previous level of performance. In 2008, Vince Young, QB for the Titans, plagued with injuries and inconsistent play, leading to a decline in his career. In 2009, Brett Favre, QB for the Packers, sorry, Blue, announced his retirement before the release of the game, and later he joined the Jets and did not perform anywhere near his usual form. In 2010, Troy Polamalu, linebacker for the Steelers, suffered a knee injury and missed a large portion of the season. Now, interestingly enough, this was two players who were on the Madden 2010. The other player was Larry Fitzgerald, and he suffered no serious injuries or setbacks in that season. So Larry Fitzgerald is the one who broke the Madden curse.
I say, because statistically, like if this was a drug trial, you know what they would say.
What would they say?
They would say the curse is real.
Well, and if you look at that, I went through every single year and there was something that happened from 1999 to 2010 with every single one of these guys. It's insane.
But there's no curse. You don't
believe
in curses.
There's no curse. I don't believe in curses. Right.
Don't believe
now, however, though, the curse did rear its ugly head twice more since then. So in 2012, Peyton Hills, running back for the Browns, struggled with injuries and contract disputes, leading to his exit from the league shortly thereafter. And in 2017, Rob Gronkowski, tight end for the Patriots, suffered a injury during the season that required surgery. Now, since the 2010s, it would appear that the curse has been lifted. I suspect that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell Yep, careful. I said it. Conducted an exorcism at the headquarters of Electronic Arts to banish the curse to oblivion.
Who did they sacrifice to in the exorcism? Because you have to have a blood sacrifice, I'm pretty sure.
His dignity? I don't know.
There's none of that left. That was good a long time ago.
Yeah, Roger lost that a long time ago. That's for sure. So oddly enough, though, this is still a concern amongst football fans when their favorite player makes a cover for Madden. I know this all too well as Josh Allen, who I'm wearing the jersey of today, of the Bills, was on last year's cover. Now, to wrap things up, despite the desire to be superstitious, and it's much more likely, though, that the Madden curse is a coincidence. The curse is a result of the league that is basically it's a high amount of physical demand on players, and injuries are quite common. Now, we see this as a curse because human beings seek to recognize patterns and associate meaning to them when no such meaning exists. So I'm here to say now, there's no such thing as a Madden curse. But man, is it fun to entertain the idea of such a crazy and spooky idea.
Your denial, this level of denial, Ryan, is bad. And I'll be interested to hear how you change your mind when Josh Allen tears his ACL this year.
He already, it's passed. He was on it for a season, and he has now graduated past that season. He has not done anything wrong, so we are good. Yay. There's going to be somebody
else. It's going to happen.
You shut your mouths.
The curse is just a little delayed. It doesn't go away.
Fair enough.
It's like that movie, It Follows. You may keep running, but it'll catch you eventually.
Every once in a while, a curse needs a tune-up. I get that. Okay.
They made an entire movie about an STD.
So thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. And just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story or a topic you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com, and we might feature your suggestion.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to episode 117 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Watch us right here on Twitch like you're doing right now at twitch.tv/Gamers Week Podcast. Where we will record live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Central Time. We were a little late tonight. That was my fault.
I was just saying, except for today. Yeah.
Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And last but not least, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And if you join us on Patreon, you will get access to our Patreon-only Discord. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. And don't forget to put a curse on Ryan.
He's already wearing the curse.
I got two for you. Ooh. Two fingers.
Bills ain't never going to win. Bills ain't never going to win.
Oh, I hate you so much.
I can't wait to go role play as Zelda. Thanks for a great episode.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, 48 deaths. Oh.
Okay, there you go. There's enough to go around. Are you guys happy?
Yeah.
You. You're cool.
You, I'm out.
All right,
good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bills ain't never gonna win. Bills ain't never gonna win.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VD STDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.